Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Slow Burn Media and Bill Huffman present Who Killed? A podcast that provides a voice for the voiceless. Hello and welcome to episode 74 of Who Killed? I'm your host, Bill Huffman, and this is a Slow Burn Media production. On this week's episode, I will be concluding my conversation with the one and only Sarah Turney about her sister's disappearance and the person that she thinks is involved in that particular crime. There has been some news in her case. I will hopefully be able to provide some bonus material in the future. And again, this is one of those tragic cases that if it wasn't for Sarah's determined and motivated presence amongst social media and her podcast, I don't believe that the police would have followed through on some of the promises that they had made. And if you've listened to the first three episodes of my conversation with Sarah, you'll realize that there were a lot of false promises or false hopes given to her. And again, this is one of those cases where you really don't know what to believe because you have the police telling you one thing, your dad telling you another, and for a long time you believed in your dad. And again, she has given you the reasons that she has changed her stance, and this hopefully will provide some insight into why she believes her father is the person that is responsible for Alyssa's disappearance. But before we get going with our conversation with Sarah, I wanted to play you a clip from the YouTube video that Sarah had posted of her dad videotaping Alyssa while she worked her first job at, I believe, Jack in the Box. And it's just a little insight into an odd relationship, let's just say that. And again, this is Sarah's sister Alyssa talking with Michael, her father. And following the clip, I will be playing my fourth part of my conversation with Sarah Turney about Alyssa's disappearance. And again, join me for another very interesting conversation with Sarah Turney.
You got me in trouble, Dad.
How did I do that?
Because that freaking asshole, Mike, he looks and he goes, "That's illegal. He can't do that." And I was like, "That's my dad." Still, there's signs posted all in the office. I was like my dad's going to do anything. I was like, "It's my first job. My dad's video cameraing me." He's like, "So that's illegal. Tell him not to do that." I was like, "He's a prick."
Which one's Mike? The one I was talking to you?
No, the one, I don't know, the one that drives that nice-ass Mustang. Let me drive.
Which one's Mike?
Yeah, I mean, it's an insane journey, and people always tell me, like, how sad it is, and I feel so bad, but I have to hope that, you know, evoking some type of emotion will help just, you know, gather that pressure that we need.
you're doing the work that basically nobody else is willing to do because they don't get paid to do it, but you have a vested interest in it. Therefore, you are involved now. And I think that the funny thing about life is that we may think we have a plan, or we may think things are going to go one way or the other. And you start a podcast and you think you're going to be doing one case. And then the next thing you know, you are 55 episodes in and you've covered 8 billion different cases. And now you're talking to different podcasters about the cases that they cover. And yeah, I would say that it's a life changer. I would say that you've found your niche. I feel like I'm a missing child's advocate at this point because of the amount of stories and or just missing people in general or unsolved murders in general. I feel like I'm not trying to tell stories that are just stories. I'm trying to get some resolve. And that's kind of like, I think I've seen that across the board, which is good, because I think for a moment there, it went down the exploitation route. And now I think it's sort of even CrimeCon itself is acknowledged. It's more of an advocate now than it was maybe the first year. And this is not to say because I wasn't there for the first year, but to say that it was just, let's put a bunch of podcasts together and let's see what happens and get some speakers. Now it's, whoa, this thing's fucking huge. Let's get real important people here with cases that aren't solved. We could do presentations on them. And not only that, we may be able to get results.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's what's amazing. I think even CrimeCon itself is different than what they thought they were going to be today.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I mean, and if you look at it, like, I'm in marketing, and like, conscious consumerism is not a trend anymore. Like, it's something that the whole world is kind of pivoting towards. You see that everywhere from plastic bags to people becoming vegan, like, in just the media they consume. I think people are more apt to question where things are coming from or what the intentions are behind people. And I think people are starting to look at that with their podcasts. You know, there's like, why am I listening to another podcast on Chris Watts? We already know what's going on. I think that, again, it's just kind of bleeding over to everything, and people want to know that they're making a difference as opposed to just consuming what used to be like a lifestyle styled type of drama. You know what I mean?
A Lifetime movie drama.
Yes. No offense. I hear that they're becoming extremely progressive.
I'm sorry, but I grew up with the quote unquote Lifetime movies. They're Lifetime movies from the day until I die.
I love it. Like, Pregnant at 16 or whatever was like my favorite movie with Kirsten Dunst. Like, I died for that movie every time it came on. Like, I grew up with that TV with sitcoms and stuff, right? But it's just shifted. Like, people don't want to see sitcoms anymore. They want to see real life.
Yeah. I think that's a really interesting perspective on the entertainment, you know, because I've written... This isn't like I didn't sell anything, but like, I've written screenplays, I've written spec scripts, and for Law and Order, and for God, when Entourage was on, shit.
Oh.
But you know, like, yeah, I think there is definitely a sense of, but even when I wrote those scripts, it was like, I was imagining real life. I wasn't thinking of like some imaginary world. Like, I'm personally can't stand, and I know that there are many people that are going to be like, oh, yeah. I don't get it. I don't get Star Wars. I don't get it. I don't get Star Trek. I don't get the fantasy stuff. It's just,
yeah, I get that. I don't enjoy sci-fi. Come for me. I enjoy like dystopian societies because I'm like, ooh, that could happen.
Oh, Hunger Games.
I like World War Z. That.
I like World War Z. I like I'm Legend. You know, like, I like the idea of, like, you know, like having to make it in the world after the world's not there anymore. But it's hard. It was hard for me as a kid to, like, I just don't want to date myself here. But like, people would be like, you've never seen The Neverending Story or The Princess Bride? And I'd be like, I never wanted to. It's not like I didn't have the opportunity to.
right? So all they have to do is put the world ending before any type of sci-fi element, and then we're both in, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, like, oh my God, the world's end, or no, what's the one with Rogan and James Franco? Fucking funny.
That is such a funny movie. I forget what it is. Oh, my God.
This is the end. Yes. Oh, my God. The one-liners in that movie. I mean, James Franco's art.
Yeah, it's such a good movie. But I mean, yeah, I think that people are really moving towards more lifelike things. Well, and even like,
I was just trying to say that there needs to be a balance. Like, you can have a balance, though. Like, that's just what I was getting at.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree. I mean, there's so many things happening that excite me so much about the true crime community. I mean, look at the Kardashians. Like, and I posted about this on Twitter the other day. Like them or hate them, there are two Kardashians that are coming out with true crime shows. This is huge for the genre. Like, they don't have to do that with their time. They could sit back and get $250,000 for an Instagram post and live their lives just fine. They don't have to crusade these efforts for true crime.
So it was really interesting. I forget if it was the True Crime Garage or Gen Y or even Stuff You Should Know. Somebody mentioned Kim Kardashian, like, oh, I wish Kim Kardashian would just, I mean, she could use her platform for such a better cause. And this was like just a couple of years ago. And like, it seemed like, you know, right after that, it was like all of a sudden she was like all about, you know, ending mass incarceration and getting on board with getting these people freed. Hey, all the power to you. This is how, if it needs to get done, that's great. Like, I'm not going to knock it. I'm not going to knock it because you're doing a good service. And, you know, again, like you said, you can feel the way you want, feel whatever way you want about them, but they are doing something that is, they are taking what they have accomplished and they're using their platform for something good. And that's great.
Yeah. I mean, like it or not, media is power. Like, she overturned at least two cases that I can think of, if not more, when she was doing this show or whatever. But like, it's everything. Look at Adnan Syed. Look at Making a Murderer. Like, both of these cases were changed forever and changed in court because of media pressure. Like, I wish that there was a different way to go about it, but like, this is the name of the game sometimes with these hard, hard cases. And this is like the wave of what I think the future of justice is going to look like, unfortunately. Just, there's so much wrong with the system that trying to change it from the inside and reforming all these laws is just, it seems like the craziest undertaking. It's almost easier to just have the entire world scream about it and then get it back in court.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was you that I mentioned this with, but I know that I've talked about it with somebody about how, you know, John Walsh had talked about the best way to keep his, I think it was you, when we had talked about the best way to keep a case in the spotlight is for you to be their biggest cheerleader. And this was like 1987, 88, you know, so he still was coming off of Adam. He didn't have any resolution. It was, they found his body, but they didn't have, and I still don't know if I would believe the whole conviction of that. But if you ever want to read an interesting book or listen to one, Bringing Adam Home is really interesting.
It's, oh, check it out.
Yeah, it's all about the Otis Toole connection to Adam Walsh. It's weird. Tough to totally buy, but like, I don't think Walsh even accepted it until like 2004 or something like that. But, you know, in 88, he's telling everybody, I mean, cause I was a big, I loved In the Dark. That was a great podcast. And the first season was all about Jacob Wetterling, and he was abducted 5 days before Amy was. So Amy Mahalovic. And so, and he was 11, and it was like, wow, this is exactly like the type of thing that I would have been doing in my life. But he told the family that the only way to keep this case out there is for you to be out there. So what you're doing is everything that you can do, and you're the number one cheerleader. I mean, that's
hey,
it.
I'm trying. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I've tried to go all the traditional routes, so this is the only thing I have left.
But in 1988, even. Yeah. Before we even had this, we didn't even have what we have now. You now have so much more power in your own voice than you've ever had in your life, just because of the technology and advancements in the last 20 years. I mean, it really is that big of a difference.
And oh, it
is. The fact that you and I can talk on the phone, well, we're not on the phone, but we can talk from studio to studio and it sounds like we're in the same studio. It's fucking crazy. I mean, like, that technology didn't even exist 5 years. Like, I mean, maybe it did 5 years, but nonetheless, it's still crazy to think that we are able to do that. I can talk, like, I've got stuff lined up with podcasters in Australia, like, and it's going to sound exactly the same. And it's crazy.
Yeah, no, it's revolutionary. I mean, like, it does change everything. One example I love is that, love and hate, of course, but the police weren't writing me back, and I had written about 8 follow-up emails asking for a meeting about a particular subject, right? It had been weeks and weeks. Like, I ping them maybe once a week, like, hey, just wanted to check in. Any chance we can get that meeting? Like, super professional. And they weren't writing back. And so I post on Twitter, like, all 8 emails, and I'm like, I don't know. I forget what I write. Something about, I don't know what to do, like, and complaining about not getting a meeting. And literally 2 hours later, I get an email saying, okay, yeah, we'll meet with you. Like, this is the power of technology. And I said that in one of my meetings. I'm like, why does it take me posting 8 emails on Twitter to get a meeting with you guys? Like, I don't want to be this way. And it, yeah, it's just insane. But technology changes everything and it holds people accountable and, you know, provides for a better storytelling experience. And absolutely, it's revolutionary.
Squeaky wheel gets grease.
I try to be so squeaky.
Oh, like I told you, that was my dad's number one phrase. And they refer to me as, he's like, you're the squeaky wheel. It's like,
well, I mean, I spent years in their office crying and not going this route. It wasn't until they told me to get media that I did. And it wasn't until they started lying to my face that I started getting upset. Like,
now, were they trying to tell you at that time that your dad was involved?
So this, what happened was, when he was in prison, so they sat me down in 2008 and explained to me for 40 minutes about how it could only be my dad. And then I don't believe them. 2020 happens about a year later after a huge combination of factors. I start to believe that it's my father. And I go to them and say, I believe it's him. How can I help you? And so they start asking me to ask certain questions and they start asking me about certain things. And they say, okay, he's going to be released, you know, in, I think it was March of 2017. But we're not going to arrest him until he is released. So that way he can't combine sentences. He'll serve a longer term if we wait. And I'm like, okay, great, cool. Because I don't know. And I trust them. You know, we've been working together for like 10 years or whatever. And a few days before my father was due to be released from prison, the detectives were reassigned, to which I still at that time was like, yeah, don't you love that for this story? At that time, though, I was like, okay, well, you know, they plan on prosecuting, the investigation's over. Like, I get it. Like, they're done now. It's over. They're going to get him. But then they don't. So when we go into this meeting, I understand that they have not prosecuted, but I was still under the impression that they would prosecute. And that's when they sat me down and said, we're not going to prosecute without a body, and we're not going to search for that body, and you can't raise funds for that body. And we're going to give you this huge silent witness campaign that we will later deny. So I know some of the technicalities behind it. The two detectives did a mock presentation of the case for their supervisors, in which their supervisors said, no, we don't want to do this. And that's about all I know. That's it. They did later lie to me. I have a recording of what happened. Was like a few years later, I got into a meeting with brand new people. So nobody that knew the case, I didn't know these people. And they were like, listen, Sarah, if we present this for prosecution and they say no, that's it. We don't have another chance, which is absolutely not the way it works. If they present it and they say no, they actually give you notes to go back and revise and to represent. So I don't know why they're lying to me, and I don't really know why they changed their minds, but I lean towards that they don't want this to come out in court because there are some missteps that they are legally liable for.
Well, it's like they're like telling you it's double jeopardy. Like, oh, if we go and we try to do this, then we can't ever bring charges against them again. Well, if any prosecutor knows what they're doing, they're going to bring charges against them that if they can't get those charges to stick, they'll have other charges that they'll eventually be able to use.
I'm just trying to get to the point of pressing charges. Like, at that point, it's up to the judge and it's up to the jury. And although, yes, I wish for a certain outcome, I would feel a lot better if we just tried, you know? And that's what I said. Like, he's going to be 72 next month. Like, what are we waiting for? Like, we're really so afraid of double jeopardy. But if you don't even try once, we can't even get to that point.
Yeah, your parents, like, yeah, we're... Your parents were like the same age as mine. 72. Definitely plenty of time to still pay for his sins.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But they're not actively looking for anything. And that's what I said. I said, you're just sitting here waiting for something to fall in your lap. And that is the worst feeling. And they're like, no, that's not what we said. We said that we're open to leads. And I said, yes, you're waiting for something to fall in your lap because you're not looking for a body and you're not going to interview my father. So what the hell are we doing?
Yeah, I mean, they basically just told you flat out that, okay, go to the media. And if the media makes enough of a stink about it, we will investigate.
Yeah, no, and I, that, yeah. So
how
I was
the
talking.
Okay, so how the hell hasn't that happened yet? Because I'm pretty sure you're doing a damn good job of getting yourself out there.
Yeah. No, I that's a great question. I don't know. And like I said, they go back and forth. So they're like, get media. And then a few years later, one of the sergeants says, hey, you're getting too much media. And then about a month after that, his commander says, you know, we're just so grateful for all the media coverage you're getting for the case. It's like whiplash. You know what I mean? Like you, and that's why I don't trust them.
Yeah, it starts to makes you start to question which ones are sort of on your dad's side and which ones aren't.
Yeah, well, and to further
which ones
that,
want
like
justice.
It's insane. Like they I've had to stop them from releasing information that I think could hurt the case. They have never once said don't release X, Y, and Z because it could hurt the case. But I got a call from a news station who wanted to run with something. And I was like, hey, you cannot run with that. It could really hurt this. We like my dad can't know about that. And if you run this, he'll know. And like I had to fight and kick and scream for it. So like they terrify me in all aspects. Like I fully believe that they want this to implode. Like I'm the one over here trying to not release information. I'm redacting names from documents that are public record. Like right. I'm more cautious than they are.
Yeah. damn fucking reality of life. It sucks. It really does, because they want to tell you what you want to hear. And they want to be doing the right thing, but that doesn't mean they are always doing the right thing. And I think in your dad's case, I think it's one of those, have you, you know, not like, what have you done for me lately, but is this going to do us any good to investigate this?
And I mean, it's not about investigating at this point. It's about following through on what they said they were going to do years ago. We had enough evidence then, enough for you to tell me that he's going to be prosecuted when he's released from jail or prison. And then you reassign the two detectives that were on the case for 10 years and tell me that the entire cold case unit is being dissolved, which was an absolute lie. Like, what are they hiding?
Yeah, something.
Yeah, that's all I can say. That's all I can say. You know, I don't know, but it's all shady and it's not the way a police, you know, department should operate. And yeah, it's like whiplash. Like I said, they just keep lying and I will present it all. Like,
what's the name of the police department that's handling this?
The Phoenix Police Department. They're horrendous. They're in the national news all the time for just being absolutely horrendous.
Oh, so are the Cleveland police.
Yeah. It's terrible. And I just like I said, I think it's really hard to have the expectation that I'm going to go reform the justice system. But what I can do is be a cautionary tale to these decision makers in law enforcement to say, oh, shit, this person may not actually go away. We may not actually scare them as much as we think we do. And we're going to be held accountable for our actions.
Hold their feet to the fire. You're a real journalist, is what you've turned out to be.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Didn't realize you'd going to be, see, we roundabout, connect the dots all the way from the beginning of the conversation.
Ooh,
guess what you are? You are a journalist because you're doing exactly what journalism was meant to do, and that is to hold people's feet to the fire, and that was what it was created for. So, and I'm not going to say that as a negative because I work in media. So,
yeah, I'm so torn about journalists. Like, to be honest, before my dad was arrested, I thought I was going to be a journalist. I was like editor of my school paper. I was an English major. I was taking journalism classes. And then they came and knocked on my door at all hours of the night and just like harassed me. And I was like, I could never do this to someone. I could never capitalize off the worst day of their lives, you know, is what I felt in my mind. But I think what people who are like spearheading a mission like this, particularly in my manner, with like no regard for maybe some of the legal aspects of it. And what I'm doing is just crusading for truth. And I feel like it's a very idyllic view of journalism. And I wish journalism was actually like that. But from my experience working with traditional journalists is they're very afraid to run aspects of the story, including how much evidence points to my father and including all the everything that's happened with the police.
You're talking about locally?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and larger traditional media as well. Like when it comes to some TV media productions, I should say.
Yeah, like the independent ones, the ones that are not, the ones that are syndicated. This is what I would say about that. Journalists are a little too apprehensive to take on things that aren't the norm anymore. And I do believe that at the end of the day, that's going to be the thing that kills the business.
Yeah.
Because the people that watch that are dying. I mean, we're talking about a demographic that's 55 and over. I mean, is that who advertisers are really going for? Watch the advertisements on a news channel. What are they? They're for geriatrics and they're for Depends and for, you name it, for old people, it is what it is. Because that's who fucking watches the news. And I know that. Just understand that it's not, there's got to be a point, there's got to be a tipping point where media stops reading the internet.
Yeah.
Well, it's and they start doing their fucking job again, which is called investigating and doing journalistic work, not following up on stuff from the internet. It's just so ass backwards. It's unbelievable. It's like, okay, sure, you're going to take it from the internet. Well, guess who's going to be in charge after you continue down this path?
Yeah. I mean, I just don't think it's like those true hardcore investigative journalists that you think of anymore. Like the fictional character, what, Lana Winters from American Horror Story. Like, I'm deep down here in the tunnels of this mental hospital getting the real scoop on what's going on down here. And they're like kicking her out and stuff. Like,
how about the real people? Carl Bernstein, Robert Woodward. I mean,
see, I just have less of a frame of reference, so I'm sorry.
You mentioned Watergate.
Yeah, fair enough.
All the President's Men. They're the ones that wrote the book. So, like, that's what I went to school for, thinking journalism was. And Right. Fuck, was I wrong.
That's what's so disappointing. Like, I tend to not work with journalists anymore. I've had some really terrible experiences with traditional journalists. And I don't know
Most
if it's what they're being
suck.
Taught, but yeah. They're just aggressive about the wrong issues. They don't focus on things that evoke change. They focus too much on how sad I am about it. It's not productive for the story.
Oh, I mean, I've watched the way that they treat Mr. Mihaljevic around here, and like I've gained a friendship with him, and the way that they treat him when they go to his house for like an interview and they force him to look at pictures and shit. And I'm like, what the fuck are you guys doing? This is the dumbest shit I've ever seen in my life.
Like, Podcorn.
Do you not understand this person
podcasters
has a fucking
with sponsorship
heart,
opportunities like such as host red feelings, ads, like, topical discussions, why would you interview
bring
segments,
this stuff
easy
up.
As possible?
You can ask
I've been working with them for a while
sure,
now, and they are by far the easiest way to monetize your podcast. They have taken what had been a time consuming part of the podcasting process and have made it easy for me to focus on what we as creators do best.
Every
aspect. If you're looking for a way to get paid for the hard work that you put into your podcast, then look no further than Podcorn. You set the rate you believe to be fair and deal with the brands directly. There literally is no middleman. And at Podcorn, you'll never give up any rights to your podcast. Your mission is to make sure creators like me are compensated in an appropriate
saying.
Manner.
It's just bullshit.
You can check them out on
like,
their website, podcorn.com. They have packages for podcasts of all sizes. And again, I can't thank them enough for making my life easier. I've provided a link in the show notes as well, so you can find out exactly what Podcorn can do for you.
Connection there. Like, you and I can sit here and talk about it and joke about it and be real about it. But when you're given very like posed questions, you tend to give very posed answers, if that makes sense. Like, it's, there's a formality to it that I think loses a lot of heart of specifically true crime stories.
Yeah. Like, when I see you at CrimeCon, I feel like I have a bond with you. Like, whereas I wouldn't if I was just talking to some fucking dumbass that, you know, I'm just saying that, like, I'm not some journalist trying to like dig in deep on to how you feel about this and that. Like, just tell me what's going on. Like, I don't, you dictate to me how I dictate the show. Like, I don't try to make you feel one way or the other, because I think that's the number one thing about media that is so fucking wrong, is that they go in with a preset idea of how they want it to go, and you watch it on John Oliver and Daily Show and whatever when they do super cuts of like newscasters prompting people to answer the questions that they want them to answer the way they want them to answer it, and it is absolutely mind-numbing because it's like, this is so anti-journalism.
I've seen certain aspects of this case presented very one-sided, and it's just so disappointing because it's so multifaceted. And I'm like, hey, like, you didn't include this whole other part. I don't do this to everyone. It was a very special relationship. And I was like, you didn't include this one part. And it's like, they just don't care. They're like, well, that doesn't get people to care about it. And I'm like, but it's the truth.
And that's the thing that sucks about stories like your sister's, is that the way that they've fucked the news is that the longest news segment is like 2:40.
Yeah.
Come on, give me a fucking break. You think you can tell me your sister's story in 2 minutes and 40 seconds?
No, I can't do it in an hour. Obviously.
No shit, we're going on 4.
This and is why. Like... no, every interview I've done has been like 5 or 6 hours, which is why you will never hear a full interview on my podcast, because they're just ridiculously long.
Right.
Because there's so much to it.
Yeah, and I just don't understand who the fuck is making the decisions at the places that these news stations exist to think that people want to watch about old people shit. Like, I don't get it. Like, I seriously don't. Like, your demographic that you're your number one advertisers want to aim for 19 to 35. Neither of any story have you ever done ever has it ever conveyed to that age demographic. What is your goal?
Yeah, they're gonna have to change, or the world's gonna forget all about them.
Oh yeah, they're going the way of the newspaper, and that's fine. I mean, if they continue just reading the web, I mean, that's fine. I mean, I don't
exactly know. I worked for USA Today. I thought I was made. You know what I mean? You think, uh-huh. I work for Gannett. I work for USA Today. This is amazing. And I was a part of like all their massive layoffs. Like it's dying.
I worked for CBS. I got laid off, and yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, it's yeah, we've got a couple things in common when it comes to. I mean, we got dead cancer parents, and we've got layoffs. Awesome stuff, really.
All the trauma bonds. I love
really
it.
Trauma. Yeah, we're bonded. Like we're set for life.
Love that.
All the negative shit. All right. Well, let's just wrap it up. I'll probably end up having to call you again to finish this conversation.
That'll work. Hey, it's like become like a thing for us now. I love it.
Yeah, I like it. And always have something in the hopper. You know what I mean? Keep something in the back burner that's going, and yeah, it's the next podcast or whatever. And if you start to get burnt out from doing this, and gives you some alternative, or if you want to do a fucking joint show and we just BS for an hour and call that a show, and there aren't many guy girl shows, so I feel like we have a good rapport, so whatever.
Yeah, no, we definitely do. Yeah, I'm just trying to navigate it all, you know. It's just
you and me both.
It's all day every day, man. But I mean, yeah, that's what we signed up for, though. I'm not trying to like complain. I just I'm trying to master it, man. I want to win this game.
You and me both. I was a national class runner. So trust me, I went to college on scholarship. I expect to be the best at things. And, you know, when I'm not at a certain level, I'm frustrated. So I do what I can to to improve. And yeah, I'm in it to win it like you. Hell no, there's no reason I can't be just as good as the next guy.
Exactly. Well, good. Then we can help each other. I love this.
Well, I think it's a beautiful start to a friendship. So I think we should definitely talk again soon. We could talk again in 2 weeks, but we'll play it by we'll play it by ear. I mean, again, we don't have to record it. We can catch up, and if you really want to think about possibly doing another show on the side, just to keep you like loose and not always thinking about your sister, and because that's got to be tough, and it doesn't have to be true crime. You know, it could be whatever the fuck you want it to be.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, no, it's definitely something to think about.
Around true crime, but it doesn't have to be like about a certain case or anything.
Just, yeah, no, I love that.
I don't know. On that note, I will probably be putting out the first part of our conversation a week from Monday.
Okay, cool.
Because it was so good. I would have had you on this Monday, but I did Long Island serial killer because there was an update last week and I had already done that with Maggie. So
no worries. I love Maggie.
Yeah, she's awesome. And if you listen to the episode, she has some fucking crazy ass connections to this case. It's absolutely nuts.
Ooh, yeah. I can't wait.
Yeah. Well, the first part's out, so check it out.
All right. Will do.
All right. Well, thank you for your time. I said I wasn't going to keep you for 2 hours, kept you for 2 hours and 5 minutes. So,
it happens.
You know, that's what happens in this world. So I apologize. All right. Well, I am going to bundle up and I'm going to go out for a little bit and I will check you later.
All right. Have fun.
Thanks. Always,
right, bye.
Always fun talking. Take care.
Hey, you too.
Many thanks to Sarah Turney for taking a lot of time out of her busy schedule to join me for our in-depth conversations about the disappearance of her sister Alyssa. And again, this is part four of our conversation. There has been some news in her case. They have erected a billboard with her missing poster, so that is now on the interstate. You can Google that. I know that Sarah had put up a video of that on Instagram, I believe. So that is really good news. So again, thanks so much to Sarah for being such a strong person and being able to discuss so openly about her sister and who she thinks is responsible. And again, thank you guys for tuning in. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be able to produce new shows each week. I will say, for the second year in a row, I will be representing Who Killed and Who Killed in Mihaljevic and My Passion Case on Podcast Row at CrimeCon 2020 in Orlando. Now, I know that there is a lot going on with this current pandemic, so I will just say that the new dates are scheduled for October 30th through November 1st. And if you do want to buy a ticket, you can use my promo code Amy2020. Now, if you do enjoy this podcast and My Passion Case, you can help support independent journalism and my shows by clicking on the donate button on the left-hand side of slowburnmedia.com. That is slow minus the W. And you can also contribute to the show via PayPal or via the Venmo app with my username at bill-huffman-3. I will provide a link in the show notes as well. And again, every contribution does help keep these podcasts going. And again, you can help support the show non-monetarily by just leaving a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Those 5 stars help keep these cases that I cover in the spotlight. So anyone with information regarding Alyssa's disappearance is asked to call or contact the Phoenix Police Department at 1-602-262-6141 or the National Center for Missing or Exploited Children at 1-800-THE-LOST. Sarah would also like people to use the hashtag JusticeForAlyssa when discussing her sister's story on Instagram and Twitter and other social media platforms. So if you have any information about cases that I've covered in the past that are unsolved, you can always contact the FBI at 1-800-CALL-FBI or via Crime Stoppers. And again, if you'd like to stay up to date on the cases that I've covered, as well as the new shows and new episodes that I have in the pipeline, You can follow me on Twitter at BillHuffman3. It's probably the best way to know what's going on with the podcast as well as what's coming up. Now, again, this is part four. I will possibly have an extra bonus episode in the future. But again, thanks so much to Sarah for joining me. And let's just hope that she is one day able to get the answers that she deserves and justice will be served, because it is definitely something that has been put on hold. So again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, please be healthy and stay safe.
3 a.m., the comedy horror podcast that holds weekly gatherings around the campfire. Let me tell you what you're going to get. You're going to hear stories about demonic possessions, prison stabbings, skinwalkers, glitches in the Matrix, cult leaders, missing 411, night marchers, Operation Paperclip, Mesopotamian devil worship, and so many monsters it'll give Kanye West a runaway for his money. Pop and meme culture also aren't off topic. A camp where laughs and scares are constantly competing for first place. We're just a group of friends trying to bust each other's balls, find the best stories, and expand the circle in the process. 3 a.m., the comedy horror podcast, not for the faint or fragile of heart. Let's go.
Something is creeping, don't follow it down.
Let me introduce you to Barry Clue, an authorised financial advisor from New Zealand and a very special kind of stain on humanity.
He was a very knowledgeable young guy.
He was a registered financial advisor.
Type of guy that was bending over backwards to help you.
Now, you could be forgiven for thinking that Barry sounds like a great guy. And you'd be right. Well, right up until the point when you're wrong.
It was all fictitious.
You stole from my son, who has a disability.
Chris never knew. He died believing that we're all taken care of.
A psychopath is somebody who lacks empathy, acts impulsively. I think there's a strong case that Barry might be all of those things, actually.
To find out how Barry Clue stole over $15 million from 81 victims, subscribe to Clueless, The Long Con. That's Clueless, spelt K-L-O-O-G-H-L-E-S-S.